Pugel versus Board of Trustees, Mr. Martinkus.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is James Martinkus, and I represent the appellant, Diane Pugel. The issue in this case is whether or not the University of Illinois could properly and consistent with the First Amendment right of free speech dismiss Ms. Pugel for making comments at an American Physical Society meeting, which she was invited to in April of 2001. The issue becomes whether or not the university, based upon the content of that speech, the facts
if the content of the speech is fraudulent, you can certainly fire an academic employee for that.
Well, Judge, that's certainly true. But here we don't know what the content was because this was dismissed upon a motion to dismiss. There were no facts and evidence. There was no discovery taken. Unlike, similar to the case that this court about a year ago.
You can convert every academic fraud issue into a First Amendment issue.
Well, that's true, Judge. But here, but you said it yourself in the case of Swank versus Etzmark. You said the purpose of free speech clause of the First Amendment and of its judge-made corollary right of association is to protect market and ideas broadly understood.
Yes, I know, but the market is contaminated by fraud.
But where's the proof of fraud? I mean, the fact that the university itself has a hearing which the...
Well, precisely, yeah, they have a hearing, and she may have all sorts of civil remedies, defamation, what have you.
But
I don't know, but your theory is any time someone is fired for fraud, since any academic employee is fired for academic fraud, since the fraud will have been committed in a paper or speech or something like that, that becomes a First Amendment case.
But Judge, the question becomes, can the university by its own self-serving process...
Look, there are all sorts of remedies, right? Defamation, may have state law remedies, contractual remedies, breach of contract, all sorts of things.
Not including
First Amendment, because then every single academic fraud case can be litigated as a First Amendment case.
But this is a case where the First Amendment should apply.
It shouldn't apply, because you can... A student is expelled for plagiarism, right? He wrote an exam, and the exam, actually he copied it from someone else. Now, is that a First Amendment claim?
Well, in that case, it may very well be that if the hearing determined that there was a full hearing or presented at trial...
I don't think you have to have a full hearing. The First Amendment requires a full hearing in high school plagiarism cases?
But Judge,
you're going wild with the First Amendment.
If you take that position, then the university could defeat any...
No, because there are all these other remedies. Why are lawyers always charging into federal court and making far-out constitutional claims when they have plenty of state law remedies like breach of contract and defamation?
Judge, in this particular case, we believe that Ms. Pugel's First Amendment rights were violated. And if you criticize us for trying to pursue that because there might have been other state remedies, so be it. But in this case, this is a classic case.
Well, I'm concerned about a position which would convert every academic fraud case into a First Amendment case.
But this doesn't, Judge. This is unlike the cases of Trejo out of this court, where this court said it's a rare case where you dismiss it on the pleadings. That was a year ago. This court said that. Same magistrate, Judge Bernthal, dismissed it upon a motion for summary judgment. We don't know what is the disruption that the university claims. How was the university disrupted because it didn't agree with the content of her speech that she presented in Seattle, Washington? I mean, there's no way for us to know. How was the university in any fashion damaged because they never were required to answer? This case is unlike Trejo, where you got a professor going out harassing graduate women students. unlike Feldman, where you have a professor attacking other faculty members.
The university can't condone the kind of conduct she engaged in.
You've said it a million times, Ron, in your opinion, that you're talking about due process. It's some sort of a hearing, a very minimal rights hearing under our 14th Amendment. This court has taken that position countless times. You've admonished lawyers many times.
She's not a tenured employee.
She's a graduate student. She certainly has the First Amendment rights should apply to her as well.
That's different from due process. That's a different amendment.
The point I'm making is that she has no right to confront witnesses. She has no right to even know what the university's basis is. She has some opportunity for a hearing. Unlike a case where you actually get to actually take depositions, we have discovery, where you can find out what is the disruption, what is the alleged response that they're critical of. How do we know any of these things? We don't. You have this process that goes through the university where we have limited rights. We file the suit. This case is based upon content. It's very, very much unlike many of the cases that you complain of, Your Honor. This case had to do with an invitation
of a graduate student. In this case, you're going to say that if a student gets a poor grade on a paper, she has a First Amendment claim because the grade was based on the content of her paper.
No, I'm not, because that was...
Of course that's the logic of your position.
But it's not, because this was something unrelated to the university. This was not part of the
degree process. Of course it's unrelated to the university. When a member of a university goes around making speeches, writing, publishing books, and so on, all that reflects on the university, either well or poorly. It is extremely important to the university that its students and its teaching assistants and its professors not engage in academic fraud.
Judge, the point you're missing is that it was based upon invalid data. Whether or not they agree...
Knowingly relying on invalid data is a form of academic fraud.
The point is, while two professors at the university might have thought this data was wrong, other members at the physical conference may very well have thought differently.
Well, it's the same as the grade. Someone gives a grade to a student because he thinks the student's paper is poor.
But the grade is not public concern. This is public concern. This is at a very prestigious event. As a graduate student, she's invited to talk about this subject. She talks about it, she gets kicked out of the university. I submit to the court this is a far different case than maybe many of the cases that come before you.
Was she invited to speak on something that she had previously published?
This was a situation in which she and four other university professors, physicists, wrote a joint paper, all signed on to it, submitted it to a very prestigious scientific journal, Nature's. Nature found some problems in the logarithms that were used in computing certain spin frequencies.
Well, did they reject it?
They rejected it, and then the four professors that signed on blame her for the problems with the computation. But nothing happens at all. There's no inquiry, there's nothing, until she gives a speech by invitation on this topic.
Based on the information that was rejected.
But, Your Honor, the only thing that was rejected was her calculation. She never mentioned that in the speech. She responded to a question that was posed by the audience. She said, take this with a grain of salt. We've had some problems in the computation. That's why she apparently gets kicked out. If we don't have a marketplace of ideas, if we as jurists or as lawyers can come in and say that, you know, if some professors in Champaign, Illinois, don't agree with the data or how you presented the data at a national conference, I think the First Amendment is in trouble.
Look, professors, assistant untenured people are constantly fired because their superiors, you know, in the department don't like their work, don't agree with it.
But this had nothing to do with not liking her work. They didn't agree with a certain calculation.
Look, she might be denied, if she were denied tenure because they didn't like, disagreed with her calculation, would that be a violation of the First Amendment?
Well, tenure, again, I don't think that has to do anything with the public marketplace of ideas. This is
the same thing. I don't understand.
What?
She gives a speech, she gives a talk, writes a paper, and when she comes up for tenure, they say, you know, your data is no good, so you're not good enough for us, and so they deny her tenure, so then she'd have the same claim she does here.
Your Honor, in that context, the purpose of that paper was to get a private result, tenure. This was a non-degree.
Private result, but it's a public document. She gives a speech, and then the sanction is denial of tenure. Why is that any different from her being fired?
I do think it's different, and I think that you have to look. All the cases talk about the context.
Every tenure case is going to turn into the First Amendment, because in every tenure case, you're evaluating people's public performance. If it's a research type of university, they look at public papers, talks, so forth, that the person gave, and if they don't like it, they disagree with it, then she doesn't get tenure.
But all those facts are typically developed during some sort of the discovery phase.
No, they're not. You have discovery when you're turned down for tenure. What are you talking about?
Well, in this instance,
you don't have a hearing.
What
they just vote on you. They just say, we don't want you. We're not promoting you. Go look somewhere else for a job. And that's the end of it.
Well, what's the disruption in this case? I mean, is there anything that this person
can do? Disruption has nothing to do with it. There's no disruption if you tenure someone who isn't quite good enough.
Well, this isn't a tenure case, Judge.
What's the difference? The point is, whether a person is fired or denied tenure, it is a sanction, and it's a sanction based on an evaluation of a person's public speeches and documents. And you claim that there can't be any sanctions for what people say in public because that interferes with the marketplace of ideas. It's an extreme position.
I don't think that what I'm saying is that you can't look at all the factors and so forth. But here, when you have a case where a scientist, a graduate student, is invited to participate in a conference on a particular topic, and she expresses
an opinion. But that's the character of academic life. If you come up for tenure, you will have, given talks, written papers, and so on, at conferences to which you had been invited.
If you subscribe to the position you're taking on, the university is on a complete island, it can do whatever it wants, maybe that's what you're saying. There's no review, there's no context, there's nothing, because it does whatever it wants. This is a case where you do have the marketplace of ideas.
Thank you, Judge. Mr. Cornyn?
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm Mike Cornyn, and I represent the Board of Trustees of the University. Your Honor, in the district court, the plaintiff does not deny fabricating the results of this experiment, fabricating the data. The plaintiff in the briefs here does not deny fabricating the data. There was a hearing held. The issue got raised. The data was questioned of the experiment that the plaintiff was running that came to a paper that was submitted to Nature. A question got raised about the data. There's something wrong here. Plaintiff was asked not to present that when she went to speak at this conference. Don't present the data. Sometime after the conference, an inquiry panel was convened to look into two questions, and the plaintiff was given notice. Did plaintiff fabricate the data? And did she discuss the data at that meeting after she was told not to? Hearings were held. The hearing office, the hearing panel, decided that she did both of those things. She fabricated the data and then presented it. She had that reviewed at the campus level by the chancellor. The chancellor affirmed. She took it to the president. The president of the university, President Stuckel, said, let's let the Senate Committee on Student Misconduct take a look at this. The Senate Committee took a look at it, and it was affirmed. She was dismissed. She was dismissed for the two things that the hearings were held on, fabricating the data and presenting it after she was told not to. She presented fabricated data. Obviously, she knew it was fabricated because they found she had fabricated it. That's why she was dismissed. This is not a First Amendment case. She may have had a First Amendment right to appear and discuss her ideas at this conference. She doesn't have a First Amendment right to make things up as she goes along. And it wasn't the speech that she was punished for. She was punished for her action of fabricating. That's what she was punished for. She was punished for presenting it, knowing it was fabricated. Presenting it when she was told not to present it because there was something wrong with it. That's what the First Amendment case was about. There is no First Amendment case. It's not protected activity. Second, the due process case, she had all these hearings. She called a witness. As I have tried to understand this complaint, the big due process problem is that during one of the hearings, during the testimony of her doctor, who apparently came in and said she has attention deficit disorder, one of the people on the panel had to leave that hearing. And this is considered to be a due process problem. Well, even, I suggest, if you credit the doctor's testimony and buy it whole hog, that she has attention deficit disorder, the fact is she fabricated results. She didn't lose her attention. She made things up. That's what she was penalized for. They didn't bring a case here claiming that she had some sort of a disability and was unable to do the work. My goodness, we're talking about a graduate assistant in a physics program at a top research university. This was one capable student, attention deficit disorder or not. The problem was she fabricated results. She had a hearing. She got dismissed. There's no constitutional issue here. I ask you to affirm. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. And your time expired, Mr. Martinkus, and thank you also. And court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.